Welcome to Home Education Matters, the weekly podcast supporting you on your home education journey. Hello and welcome to another episode of Home Education Matters. And today I'm joined by Damien Webb from Earthlings, and we are going to be talking about environmental management. And I wanted to do an episode on environmental management because it, for many home educators, it is a really popular subject. And it's one that they quite often do quite early on in the process of doing GCSEs. And that's quite often the time when maybe we don't know a lot about GCSEs and we don't know a lot about how to approach them. And so I wanted to reach out to Damien to get his advice on the subject and the exam board and also the specifications, but also just to get some general advice on how to approach it as a subject. But before we do all of that, thank you so much for joining me today, Damien, and do tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, my name's Damien. I've been involved in home education for, I guess, 3-4 years now. And I did a lot of time overseas as an English language teacher. That's how I first got into education and sort of got everything out through there. But a long time interest in the environment, bit of a background in sciences. But I never really know how to talk about myself. But I'm long-term bug geek and general sitting in fields kind of hippie type. And so environmental management's exactly up my street.
So do you tutor generally, or do you, because I only know you as a home ed tutor, and I only came across you because I think Jake was full at one point from Humanities, and he basically said, okay, like, you know, try Damien. And I thought, oh, I've not heard of this guy. So do you tutor more widely, or is it just environmental management to home educators you offer?
I started with environmental management, but broadened that into geography. The two kind of back each other up, although there are different sort of challenges with the exams. Sort of explored out from that, using environmental management as a core. I started looking into marine science, which just turned up, and started looking at A-levels with environmental sciences, but still keeping it with the environmental management as the core, really, sort of sustainability and environment-based stuff.
And do you do one-to-one tutoring, or is it only group classes you offer?
I do one-to-one tutors. I think I started off that way, certainly before group classes really became a thing. And some people aren't really confident with a group class and sort of benefit more from a sort of a one-to-one kind of approach. But yeah, a few when I can fit them in. It's always interesting to the sort of rapport you can build up with a student one-to-one, especially if they're confident enough to talk directly with you.
So it's not purely home ed home educated children that you work with?
Some are in mainstream education, and I do it on the side with that. Environmental management, strangely, isn't something that seems to be offered in many schools, but seems a fundamental thing in understanding the world we live in. I mean, I certainly never learnt environmental management or anything related to it at school, and I wish I had.
Why do you think it's not offered in school? Because do you think it's perceived as a soft touch or something?
Perhaps. I don't know. I think perhaps it's still an element of, I don't know, it's perhaps seen as, I don't know, better term other than whiffly. I mean, schools often prioritise the English, math, science, business studies, things that have a sort of perhaps a more clear and direct link into work. Even though something like environmental management probably has more applicability than any other subject I've come across.
Yeah, and environmental management is, I kind of want to say, uniquely popular in the home ed world, but it is. I mean, it's a hugely popular subject with home educators. And I think partly that's because a lot of home educated children are very switched on to current affairs and environmental affairs. And do you think that that is part of the reason it is so popular?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm so amazed every time I go into class at just how switched on they are. I'm regularly learning new facts from the students, and the sort of engagement and sort of passion I see with it, I think, is part of what makes it so popular. I think as a first GCSE, I mean, we can spend sections of the class just looking at cool bugs and volcanoes and things that generally are attractive to students. And I think one of the sort of most basic bits of one of the most basic ways we learn is trying to understand the world around us, from why does it rain to why is this rock here to how does a plant grow. I think that's sort of fundamental to how we learn as children, and I think it's sort of astonishing that that's not in education more widely, learning how things grow, like why does it rain, things like that. And I think it's a lot of questions that children are naturally attracted to.
I think as a subject as well, it closely looks at our integration with the world as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that's increasingly in a sort of industrialized or urbanized environment, people can feel very detached from that. And it offers a lot of wonder and I guess a sense of attachment with it that may be lost. Certainly, if you grew up in a city or a town, I certainly grew up in a industrial area and always had this kind of felt a certain disconnect from it. Often the only wildlife I would see would be the few weeds growing along the side of the road or pigeons and things like that, and always felt a desire to learn more about it. Yeah, I think it does attract. I mean, sort of when teaching geography is supposedly trying to understand the world. It's the study of the earth, and I think environmental management is definitely that. Both understanding it and understanding our impacts on it. And I think a lot of kids, even from a very young age, are crucially aware of some of the issues that come with failing to understand how to interact with our environment. I mean, kids from 10 and 11 understand process of extinction and climate change better than, certainly better than I did at their age.
You mentioned geography, and certainly in schools, geography is the preferred subject to environmental management, whereas in the home ed community, I think it's slightly switched around. I think environmental management is preferred to geography. But where do you see that the link between them, and where do you see the differentiation between them?
Yeah, that's a really good question. As subjects, geography is much more granular. It looks in things a lot more detail. Certainly how it's assessed is a lot more challenging, a lot more look at. Geography finds itself in a weird place. It can't really decide whether it's a humanity or a science, and it incorporates bits of both. But it looks at things in a lot more detail, prioritizes a lot of more critical thinking skills, interpreting graphs and data, constructing arguments in an essay format. But yeah, I suppose certainly I do the EdExcel syllabus, and it's half split between studies of the physical environment, how rivers work, the science part, and sort of studies of almost sociology and economics. Whereas environmental management is purely how does the world work, how do we impact it, and how can we deal with that more sustainably. It covers a far, far greater range of topics, but just in less detail, I guess.
One thing I noticed when my son was looking at geography and then ultimately chose EM was that geography seemed to have a lot of case studies that you needed to memorize quite a bit of information in order to go into the exam. Now, environmental management is unusually light on content, I find, in as much as when you get to the exam paper tends to have a lot of the information that you need to answer the question in the actual exam paper, and you just need to kind of work out how to find it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the second paper of environmental management in context is all about, I guess, putting yourself in the mind of an environmental management. It gives you the case study and wants you to approach it with your knowledge of the processes. It doesn't require you to say give a specific example of water pollution or an earthquake event, although it's beneficial to do so. In the syllabus, it asks you to look at specific case studies of, say, water pollution or the management of an earthquake, but it rarely asks you to say specifically in this earthquake in Nepal, there were these consequences. But I suppose it focuses more on being able to interpret that data, which I think is a good step into then remembering the case studies for geography. The two seem to work very well together, and I often find EM is a really good start to go into geography to then apply those skills a bit later on.
Well, it's interesting because I always kind of in my head saw EM and geography a bit like biology and human biology, in as much as if you've done one, I feel like doing a second might look a bit bad because it might be a bit like, oh, wow, you've done like two almost identical subjects.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Eleanor. Like it's in reality the two are really quite different. I mean, there are some topics that cross over. Certainly things like the management of natural hazards goes almost directly across. But I think like EM gives you, I think geography without environmental management is kind of missing something. If geography is kind of understanding the world, it focuses on very small things. Like, say, you look at how rivers work and how hazards work solely, and that's your understanding of the physical world. And then you look at, say, economics or how urban environment development. It seems very, very focused, but sort of missing a lot of background knowledge that I think it assumes you've already picked up.
Yeah, I think as well, I noticed that EM has more of a focus on the natural world, whereas geography has quite sizable units on things like migration and that kind of thing, more like the economic factors within the physical population.
Absolutely. Yeah, and a lot of it. And I think what is often most challenging for a lot of geography students is that they come into it wanting to learn about the world and end up bogged down in urban land use patterns and reasons for migration and conflict and the economic development of countries. And it's often where their enthusiasm can be challenged a lot of the time. Obviously, a lot of geography students go into it with that in mind, but I think a lot of geography students go into it expecting to learn more about how the world works and then meet a wall of quite concrete-based stuff.
Yeah, and I think actually the opposite works as well, in as much as I think sometimes you're right, students go into geography, they just want to learn about rocks and the water cycle. Then you've got students that go into geography and they absolutely love the more like this, almost like the sociology side. But then they're having to do things like, volcanoes, and they're like, nah. And so part of me thinks, well, why would you not just do EM and sociology if you, or like one or the other rather than geography, which, as you say, feels like this slightly uncomfortable balance between the two. And actually, it's interesting with I'm saying this because as I'm talking, I've realized that I have not done a podcast on geography. It's one of the few subjects I haven't done a podcast on. And I think I have a huge bias against geography because at my school, it was the subject that the headmistress taught us, and I did not like her. And I remember the very first lesson, we had to memorize the population of China. And it was 6,003,558 or something, right? And I remember even at the time at 11 thinking, surely this is going up by the day. Like, why am I having to memorize this? So I think I just have a bias against geography. So I will leave geography to one side because I clearly have a massive bias against it.
But I completely agree. I've been fascinated in the natural world since I was a kid, but I didn't do geography at school because it was boring. Oxbow lakes, the formation of Oxbow lakes and things like that were all that seemed to be prioritized. It seemed very stuffy and very like sort of archaic even, certainly when I learned at school. So I didn't do it.
Yeah, and both my children started studying geography GCSE and they both dropped it for different reasons because I think, they both found it. My son just thought, why do I have to memorize a million case study like facts? And my daughter was like, this is boring with a capital B. And she loved environmental management. And they both loved environmental management. So talk to me about environmental management. It's Cambridge IGCSE, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really it's a really broad syllabus. I mean it covers everything from mining to there's a lot of fishing nets weirdly in the ocean unit, but it covers everything from mining and how rocks are formed to how people produce energy and the kind of human dimensions of that. Agriculture, the water cycle, processes in the atmosphere, human population dynamics, and questions of birth control to the basic functioning of ecosystems. It sort of seems to cover a huge range of things that offer many rabbit holes that you could then go down further. I mean, I'm constantly learning stuff. I've been teaching it several years. I studied it at a master's at university, and I'm still learning new things about it every day, and I'm still being told new things about it by students, and new stories are emerging with it, because the truth of the matter is that we really still don't understand how all of these processes work, and we certainly don't know how to manage their impacts. So it seems an ever-evolving kind of subject, and one that affects our daily lives.
Does the syllabus change very often?
Not a huge amount since I've been teaching it over the last couple of years. We're on the sort of 22, 24 syllabus. There've been minor changes with it, but the core content remained unchanged since the sort of 2021 when I started teaching it. Some minor variations, adding in new bits of science, like so when we talk about energy, we're developing new energy technologies all the time, so they'll bring them in. But often, even in class, we'll be a little bleeding edge with it. We'll be talking about something that is relevant, but it isn't quite in the syllabus yet, so don't necessarily talk about this in the exam yet, guys. But this is where it's developing, and I think we're often a few steps ahead of it. I mean, we're talking about mining. We talk about mining in the first unit, but since the syllabus is out, we're looking at mining the deep sea, realistically talking about mining asteroids, which may be there in the syllabus in a couple of years' time. But it hasn't changed a huge amount in the time I've been teaching it, because the core content remains pretty much the same. There may be some like variations in the specific energy technology we use, but the principles of how we make it and what we use it for don't really change that much. I guess it works from quite a flexible core.
Do the case studies that they present give them an opportunity to be a bit more topical or not?
Absolutely. I mean, the textbook's diabolical. It hasn't been updated in a long time, and it's sort of lags somewhat behind. But like more than any other subject, it well, not more than any other subject, but like many other subjects, really benefits from keeping up to date with current affairs. So we look at case studies that are pulled together from the news and current affairs, and I think that helps like give a reality to it. I mean, the study of the environment shouldn't exist in the textbook. It should exist in your interaction with the environment. So I think I put in more, certainly when I do it, I put in more case studies than is necessary, because it helps see those processes in action, and often bring the kind of human dimension to them home that may seem abstract in a textbook. But when you see the impacts of water pollution on communities, and like I'll have kids, oh yeah, we saw. I regularly get sort of messages from students who are like, oh yeah, this happened in my area. And they'll bring, there's one about a power plant recently that she'd, oh yeah, this, I saw this in the news, which is in my local area. And sort of getting them to look at it with a real world perspective is helpful. And having specific case studies does help, but it's not sort of required in the exam, but helps
Okay.
realize it, I guess.
So when we're talking about environmental management, there's one exam board that offers it, and there's one
There is.
specification. So there's no GCSE in it, there's no AQA, Edexcel, nothing like that, just Cambridge.
Just Cambridge, to my knowledge, and they're the only one offering it. It did offer it at a full A level and then dropped it down to AS level. They seem to be the only people offering it. But I think it's, yeah, it's sort of popularity comes from a number of reasons. But yeah, I'm sort of surprised it isn't offered more, but I think it's as a concept, environmental management is pretty new. Even the idea of having to manage the environment is something that hasn't necessarily been in schools and contemporary consciousness, I don't know, for that long. But yeah, there's only one that offers it. I'm very glad they do, because it feels, yeah, the enthusiasm I get from students, and I think the value of that, even if they don't go on to other study anything related to the environment, is key. I think it should be taught at every level.
Well, I think this is a first then for our podcast, because normally at this point of the podcast, I will be asking you to tell us about the different exam boards and which one you rate over another and which is good for this and which is good for that. But we only have one exam board here. So tell me about then the specification. It's two separate papers, is it, with no practical component?
Yeah, no practical component. Although we do practical elements with it. We do things like soil testing, but that isn't assessed. They do look at the theoretical application of things, especially with the ecosystems unit. But I suppose I'll break it down. So it's broken down into 9 units, which all kind of connect with each other. The first unit looks at rocks and minerals, formation of rocks. Moves that onto mining and the economic benefits of that and the environmental consequences of it. It basically does, how does this work? How do we mess it up? How can we do it better? It does that with rocks and minerals, then looks at energy generation, various energy technologies, why people use more energy, cost of that, looks at agriculture, the formation of soils, how things grow. Impact of that, how you manage it more sustainably, looks at water, water pollution and diseases, ocean processes, again, following the same kind of how does it work? How sometimes do we mess it up and how could we do it more sustainably? Looks at natural hazards in a much, much less detail than it does with geography, looks at abstract processes, then almost a sociology with human population dynamics and resource use. Even talking about things like birth control and managing human populations, and then a unit on ecosystems and the basic principles of how ecosystems work. And then there's kind of an experimental element in terms of how do you measure biodiversity? And while it doesn't specifically require any practical stuff, the second paper, Management in Context, it requires you to look at things experimentally. It will give you, say, a survey and like what's wrong with this survey. It will ask you to think about things experimentally. How would you measure the presence of sugarcane beetles in a sugarcane field? So while there's no practical element, I think it lays the foundation of a lot of experimental thinking that then goes on to help people later. But certainly, even though it's not necessary for assessment, I certainly encourage students to do it wherever possible, engage in sort of citizen science bits and put it into practice, because then that comes into its own with the final paper. But I guess with the two papers, the first one breaks things up and looks at this is a question about water. This is a question about agriculture. This is a question about populations. But in the second paper, it'll choose one country's case study. So we're looking at Australia and give you some information about Australia, give you the information for your case study, a map, some information about the population or its main industries or whatever information it chooses to provide. And then use that to bring out knowledge and everything. So you'll be talking about, say, Australia, and you'll be talking about coal mining in Australia, then you'll be talking about floods in Australia or wildfires. Then you'll be talking about, I don't know, cane toads as an invasive species, using one place as a sort of as a case study. And it sort of encourages students to put themselves in the mind of an environmental manager. How would you tackle this problem? Often with things they've never seen before. And encourages them to see the sort of interconnection between agricultural systems and human population or natural hazards.
What about the weighting of both papers?
50-50 straight across the board. Both papers count equally towards it.
How long are they?
Hour 45, unless they've changed it. Yeah, hour and 45 minutes with sort of 25% extra time if you need it. Yeah, it can catch people off guard, the case studies sometimes. I try and encourage students to think critically beforehand, to sort of take the mindset of, okay, this is the problem. How would you approach it? Which is often something they may not have experienced before. But yeah, it's essentially an assessment. It could I think why it's popular a lot of the time is it can be seen as an easier assessment. It's certainly like there's no one use black and white terms, but it's certainly easier than tackling the geography exam. The geography exam requires a lot more data analysis, essay writing skills that they won't necessarily have. But certainly to get your way through it, understanding the key terms is all you really need to get through it to the pass level. If you want to take it to higher level, some of the experimental design kind of thing's important, but generally speaking, it doesn't require a sort of complex skills, if that makes sense.
How important is the memorizing of key terms or keywords? Is it like in geography and biology, for example, where you really do need to memorize like a whole host of them, or are you able just to kind of wing your way through it?
It's really important. I think almost more important than geography. There's a long glossary. I mean, if you look at the mark schemes, I always encourage students to look at the mark schemes because if you're going to take a test, you want to know the parameters of the test. But the mark schemes are often lists of the key terms. So while you may describe a process, unless you've got that key term, you might not get a mark. So it's certainly important. Things like flashcards are often useful for helping to memorize those things. Being able to use those key terms, often quite long terms, is really important for it. But if you can memorize that, it's fairly straightforward to do.
Okay, and you mentioned about the kind of long essay questions in geography. And I know that there will be people listening who, there'll be two lots of people listening. There'll be the first type of person listening who thinks, my child doesn't like writing very much. How much writing is there? And then there's going to be the second type of person listening thinking, my child doesn't like maths. How much maths is there? So answer those questions for our listeners. How much writing is there and how much maths is, and how hard is the maths in it?
So there's basically three types of math questions. Make a percentage, make an average, and make a mean. That's pretty much it.
And graph analysis.
Graph analysis as well, but only really to the extent of it has increased from this to that is kind of the extent of it. They sometimes throw some curveballs in there, so like to keep us on the toes. Occasionally they'll throw in a pie chart, but there's really not more complex maths than that. Working percentages both ways, both making a percentage from a figure and I describe that. My math isn't great. Math has always been my bugbear, so it's always been an attraction to me. But very, very little math.
So
The
like key stage three maths,
yeah,
basically.
absolutely. I mean, the whole exam is more key stage three than the geography exam is, for sure. There's typically a long question, a 6 or 7 mark question, perhaps two. Sometimes as an essay, so it's weighted by a level one answer, a level two answer, a level three answer, or sometimes it's just a mark for having made this point. So you
Is
could
that
go
like a
on.
for and against kind of essay? Like, how far do you agree? How far do you disagree?
They'll do it, yeah. So hydroelectricity is the best way to generate renewable power. To what extent do you agree with the statement? Yeah, that's the sort of top tier of it. And at that, you'd be expected to do a on the one hand, but the other hand, balancing the argument. But there's no more than unless they change it up. There's never more than one or two of these. So the writing components, fairly low. They'll look at explaining processes, which I think is one of the more challenging bits. So, like, how does acid rain form, or how does a sedimentary rock form? And explaining things clearly in a sort of recipe list kind of way is often one of the challenges that I think students find initially, certainly if they haven't any experience with writing. But they're both fairly low, and I think that's why it's quite attractive. But very young students sit the exam and do it very well. I think there's with something like geography, there's an assumed existing knowledge of math skills and assumed existing knowledge of essay writing skills that can be a bit of a barrier for students if they've not done it before, but fairly limited is the answer. I guess that's quite attractive.
Yeah, and I think that's also why quite a lot of home educators choose it as their first kind of launch pad GCSE, because it is quite a cuddly friendly one, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it does, in terms of the skills, it can be. And I guess a lot of the time I'm doing, I end up teaching those basic graph skills and the math skills and the basic essay writing skills that they may never had any experience of before they go on to do it at higher detail. And there are really lots of really cute animals involved in it, but it could be pretty Pretty traumatic at times. We do look at volcanoes with like vast amounts of casualties and tackle some very large questions like climate change and population control, which can be quite like bitey, you know. So it seems it can, yeah, I guess the skills themselves can be sort of cuddly, but at times challenging in terms of the content you're dealing with and sort of encouraging sort of creative problem solving to it.
Yeah, I completely agree. And in that way, it's quite like citizenship and global citizenship, isn't it? In that it asks the big questions that other subjects don't necessarily ask because they're quite busy focusing on memorizing content. So I actually did a podcast a year or so ago with which was called Exam Hacks. And the lady I did it with, her biggest hack, which I took on board as a home educator, was that Cambridge offer three exams that are in effect 1.5 exam content between them. That is travel and tourism, business studies, and environmental management. And that basically there's such a crossover that the content transfers one to the other. And I was able to prove this by the fact that my daughter studied environmental management and then 3 months later sat the travel and tourism without actually studying the travel and tourism. She just took like residual knowledge of the world and her EM. And I think the same could definitely be said for business studies, which also has a lot of similarities. So I remember that when I was doing this podcast with Chetana, she mentioned that Cambridge has particular exam like question types, like explain, describe, evaluate, whatever. So tell us a little bit about those in the environmental management exam.
Absolutely, yeah. The command words, are key to it. So typically, an explain would be your recipe question. Define this process, show how it works. They'll often ask the question could be regarding the same topic, but whether it's explain, suggest, or describe would have a different influence. But explain are your recipe questions. Explain how rock is formed. Explain how climate change occurs, et cetera, et cetera. Describe would be looking for, so describe two, I guess it's best in context, really. So describe two ways of improving agricultural yields. You'd get, typically be sort of 4 marks. 1 mark for saying one way of increasing agriculture is irrigation. Irrigation works by adding water to plants to help them to grow. Another method would be mechanization, 1 mark. Second mark for explaining how mechanization works. They'll typically say, like, suggest methods of increasing agricultural yields. Look at the mark scheme, suggest methods of increasing agricultural yields. 3 marks. They want three different methods to do it. They'll do name or state questions where just say the key term. Don't waste any time explaining it. They just want to see that nice term, so and we'll tick it. The mark scheme has a list of these terms, tick it, and don't waste any time. So getting your head around those terms is really key to saving time in the exam, and again, knowing the parameters of the test. But they tend to not really work. Don't have many questions other than those ones, like describe trends in. Whatever the graph says, describe trends in energy production according to the graph, 2 marks. It'll typically be 1 mark for overall trend, 1 mark for supporting it with data. Those tend to be the ones they see most of. Explain questions, always looking for that level of extra detail, like, well, why does it work? Describe just basically, the key term and its definition and name states just drop the key terms. That tends to be it. They'll do to what extent do you agree with this statement? In the second paper, though, when you're looking at designing experiments, there might be, they still use the same command words, really, suggest ways of improving this experiment, state one tool that could be used to do this. They don't really go much further than that. Spend quite a lot of time looking at those terms because once you know the command words, they call it, you know, you can switch into that mode and once you get your head around that's what they want, if you know how they want you to answer, then it's straightforward to it, and spend quite a lot of time making students aware of that, because it's, you know, knowing the parameters of the test, whether it's describe, explain, or suggest, or name, they switch into a mode. And if you tackle it, oh, this is a sort of describe question, describe two ways, 4 marks, they'll switch into a mode, oh, this is what they want, and answer it that way, and sort of drill into that way of attacking the question.
Yeah, it's interesting that you describe it as knowing the parameters of the test, which is much nicer than my phrase, which is jumping through the hoops. But realistically, it's the same thing, right? It's knowing the rules and obeying them. Okay, so you mentioned earlier on that you think that one helpful route into the content is through case studies. Now, that leads me a little bit on to, I wanted to ask you about how you actually study for environmental management, because normally this is not a question I ask, because normally you get the textbook and you do the text. If you're self-studying, you get the textbook and then towards the end you sit exam papers and you're done. Now, in environmental management, as anyone who vaguely hangs around in home ed Facebook groups will know, the environmental management textbook is famously awful, and most people buy it and then sell it on. You'll see it secondhand in all the groups because nobody keeps it for very long in their home. So is there a sort of route that you would recommend when it comes to accessing the content, but maybe not necessarily using the textbook?
That's a really good question. And I think in teaching classes on it, I think that's the role I play, because it's opaque. It's supposedly covering A level and GCSE, covers things in too much complexity, doesn't present it in an accessible way. I really recommend using the syllabus a lot of the time, and I encourage students as often as possible to interact directly with the syllabus content itself and almost use it as a checklist, certainly towards the later stages of it, as a sort of self-assessment tool. But no, I wish I had an easier answer for that, and I wish there was a more accessible resource for it. I think I spend a lot of my time trying to put it in more accessible terms and pointing people in the right direction. I wish there was an easier answer to that question, and I think that's the main issue with it. I use a lot of sources from the news, and things like documentaries can be useful for it, but there's no magic silver bullet for it.
I know that when my daughter was studying it, we had a look at the textbook, which we'd got for my son, who also hadn't used the textbook. And in the end, my son and I realized that he sat a paper quite early on, a past paper, got a very high mark. And so we thought, okay, let's just plug the gaps. Let's do past papers and plug the gaps. And that was a route that I then took with my daughter, where we didn't actually study the content. We just sat the paper, looked at the mark scheme, and then were like, oh, okay, you clearly don't know anything about agro fuel. And so we would then find a YouTube video on that and plug the gaps in that way. But but the syllabus as well, I mean, towards the end, we were ticking off bits of the syllabus. There's no sign of a decent textbook coming.
No, I really wish there was. I really wish there was.
You'll have to write one.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, don't tempt me. It's changing all the time. But yeah, it's this. Yeah, the syllabus, and then, I mean, that sort of depends on having the research skills yourself to be able to do it, and having people to support you to be able to do it. But I guess one of the benefits of home education is the sort of ownership of your own learning and researching yourself. Perhaps the fact that the textbook isn't great is a blessing in disguise, because it encourages people to do their own research with it.
That's exactly the case with astronomy as well, which famously has a pretty awful textbook. So what about other routes into the content? Are there any YouTube channels, for example, you would recommend, or any other online resources other than obviously your own?
As channels, I'm forever looking around for them. Nothing's consistent on a sort of a hit or miss basis, really. But I often, when I'm trying to prepare a lesson, I'll just search the particular topic on YouTube and pour through the content, looking for something that's appropriate. But I end up getting things from a wide range of sources. There could be travel documentaries for engagement. things like the BBC wildlife documentaries are very good for engagement. Certainly, the earlier ones are less showy and dramatic and have a lot more science in them. But I'll poach things from geography when that crosses over. There are some resources out there, like the BBC Bite Size stuff is sometimes appropriate for it. Bits from marine biology, but again, not one fixed source. So I think what I find myself doing, or my role a lot of the time, is collecting them in one place and sort of proofing them so that they're sort of at the right level.
Yeah, and actually that really resonates because I feel like that's pretty much what I do with this podcast. So that works. What about A level then? Because you briefly touched on that. Environmental science is an A level, like, or environmental science isn't,
Yeah.
is that an A level?
Environmental science is an A level, which I'm tackling this year with large amounts of research. Environmental management was an A level, but has recently been dropped, run by Cambridge, but been dropped down to an AS level for reasons unknown, much to the annoyance of many of my students who intended to go on to it. But environmental science is a different kettle of fish. It sort of requires environmental management as sort of prerequisite. Yeah, it is environmental management, but with more of an emphasis on data collection. So I suppose it is the most natural evolution of it, but sort of with almost a missing step in between the two parts.
Is that also Cambridge, the environmental science?
No, it's not. The environmental management is Cambridge, but it's AQA, the environmental science one that sort of tackling this year, which has mandatory fieldwork components, which requires a lot of math skills and sort of experimental knowledge. But all of the students on there at the moment have done environmental management or geography before that have. It's almost that environmental management was the first step, geography the second step, and then environmental science is the third. But it's challenging. It's stretching my scientific knowledge, but that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, and as the name indicates, I'm guessing it's just got more of a scientific footing.
Absolutely, yeah. But I mean, certainly with learning a lot of the processes in environmental management, we often encourage kind of vaguely, when it's raining, look at how water moves through the environment. Like, watch how it moves down the side of the road. Watch how the soil becomes compacted when people walk up and down it. In a way to try and like realize these things, always in sort of almost a vague way, like go and look at the rain, like look at a plant grow, or look at how the soil acts. It's difficult to see the direct sort of results of that, but seeing things actually happening, or like then I'll get an enthusiastic picture from a student saying, "Hey, I saw evidence of acid rain here," or "Hey, look at this terrible agricultural management." Again, trying to apply it to the real world.
It is nice like that, environmental management. I know that my children, when we watch things on TV, every now and then they'll shout out the word eutrophication because it's like, I feel like that's all they learned in their year running up to environmental management because it feels like you could put that in for like every question in environmental management. I used to say to my daughter, if in doubt, just stick in eutrophication or the carbon cycle and you'll probably be hitting it somewhere.
Oh, yeah, that sounds very familiar. Yeah, it comes up and it's a really difficult word, but it does come up a lot. It's relative to lots of stuff. It's funny you should say that. Yeah, it does come up a lot.
So do tell our listeners where they can find you on social media or your website or anything like that.
Yeah, so I'm on Facebook. I'm on Facebook as Earthlings Learning. I do have a website, earthlingslearning.co.uk, and can be contacted by email through either of those. I'm always posting random environmental things on the page, things of note or things of interest, maybe related to the topics or not, but related to the environment in general. Yeah, on Facebook, earthlingslearning.co.uk, there's sort of messaging. Email messaging through that.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much for coming on and guiding us through environmental management. If I ever get over my sheer prejudice against geography, I might bring you back on so you and I can moan about geography together.
Sounds lovely. Thanks very much for talking, Eleanor.
Thanks, Damien.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining us for today's Home Education Matters podcast. See you at the next one. Have a lovely day.